Welcome to The Brendan Osborne Show, the podcast that inspires business owners to connect their actions to their dreams. My name is Brendan Osborne, and I'll be sitting down with entrepreneurs, successful business owners, and people who have a true passion. We talk about their process, the lessons they've learned, and the daily sacrifices they make. My guest today is a coach. She is an author. She's an all-around great person and a great friend. Please welcome to the show, Katie Dean.
Yeah, and just my thoughts, like everything.
Honestly, at first I didn't believe it. I did not believe that this was actually happening.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like I just was like, oh, yeah, it's someone else's issue and that sort of thing. But then as you started seeing all the, you know, the changes and the closures and the fear and the everything, that's when I really dug into the memes.
Yep.
On social media. I was like, no. I don't understand how this is going to happen.
Just but, come a little closer if that's all right, but just keep saying.
Yeah. But then the reality of it, yeah, it's affected so many people, but I also see a heap of people thriving.
Yeah. Has it affected you personally?
In terms of the different, like as on a personal level, the major impact has been the kids being home from school, which then impacts my ability to show up and work.
Yep.
How I would normally, but I actually then a few weeks ago when it all first started happening and I realized that the kids were going to come home, where you're seeing people cut back, I put someone on.
Yeah.
So I went and hired a virtual assistant.
Yeah, awesome.
To pick up the slack that I wouldn't be able to. So instead of like grabbing all my money and going, how am I going to secure this? I was like, I need to be able to outsource this so I can save my sanity with the kids and keep living my life at home and then have someone else doing the back end and keeping things going there and just being able to delegate. So while I'm actually, it's probably, I'm outlaying more money, it's continuing me to be able to bring more money in.
And have you found that clients, in terms of new clients, is new people looking to make decisions?
It's changed in terms of my client base. I had a, where usually clients would just come to me.
So you're working with one-on-one?
I work one-on-one and I've got varying stages of different price points. Like I've got my books, which are at a lower price point end of like your $20 to $35. Then I've got an online course that I've created, which is around your sort of $150 mark. And then working with me one-on-one, which is your premium pricing.
Yep.
But it's the lower price point ones, which people are happy, like that they're turning over really, really well and doing better. And I only released my audiobook a week ago, which was in the thick of it, which was perfect. But I'd been working on that. It was just a fluke that I'd been working on that.
And did you personally record the audio? How'd you find that experience?
To be honest, like that's pain. It was such a long process. Like I thought it was going to be something that was really simple, but the mentality of having to sit my butt in the chair to record and to keep recording, that was a lot to read out your own words. But because I didn't try and get it to a quality that was going to be on Audible, I just allowed it to be something for me to market through my website myself as like a monetized podcast, I guess you could say.
Yep.
It was so that became more fun because then I could, you know, narrate updates and funny little random things, and it was way less pressure. But that's been going really, really well.
So with your podcast and how you, not your podcast, your audiobook, how you've done it now, it's not just reading, you've got like little extra bits in there.
Yeah, me commentating, like an updates from when, because the book was probably written 2 years ago, released last November, but my life's changed a lot since I wrapped the writing of it. So adding little bits and pieces there, which is then a value add for anyone who's also got the book, then it's like, well, what's the update? So it's just those tiny little tweaks that you can do, like, and repurposing your content, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely interested, too, in your writing process.
Ah.
So with that one, how long does it take you to do a book?
Yeah.
Or the last two books? And two, are you on the, like, keyboard? Are you handwriting? What are you doing?
All on the keyboard. So I've never done a writing course. I've never been to a how to write a book thing or anything. I just decided that I wanted to write a book. And which I actually think was the easiest, the smartest thing, because whenever you're formulating something like this, you've got to find your own process. Like anyone can tell you how to do things, but the way that like, so for becoming brave, for me, writing is really cathartic and a way for me to process whatever it is that I'm feeling and get myself from A to Z. So as I just wanted to talk about becoming brave and turning your anxiety into bravery and your fear into bravery. And for that, I started with my contents. And I always start with my contents. Write down the table of contents that you want to take your reader on, the journey, like, and what you would call the chapters. Yep. And then it's purely going back and bulking it out. That's it. That's all it is. And then I would, with that, look at it, and it probably took me maybe 18 months to write Becoming Brave because I was pregnant and then had a newborn and the rest of it.
Wow.
And Messy took me about 12 months, but I could have got that done a lot quicker, but again, by that stage I had two children. So, but it was just always something would come to my mind wherever I was, or I'd be having a conversation and I'd either put like something in my notes section on my phone and then find a way to slot that story into wherever I needed it to be within that process, that book or anything like that. I just think we overcomplicate it and think that it's got to be some huge, big wall of post-it notes or that you've got to have a special formula. Mine was in the Words document on my like Apple Mac.
And did you try to set away time or is just like whenever you thought, oh, I'm all right now, just go for it?
I never put an end date on it until I was close to it, because I didn't want, for me, if something says like do not touch, like I want to touch it, but if someone says you need something done by this point, I'll rebel against it and just say, even if I've said it, I'm just like, don't tell me what to do, I don't know what I'm up to, I'm just going to ignore that, and then I resist. But with Becoming Brave, especially because it was such therapy for me, and I'd never written a book, so I really wanted to achieve that. It was just something that I set about doing every day. I'm just going to do a little bit every day.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And that's all it was. But towards the end, when I got editors involved, and then when publishers were involved, the pressure was on that I just had to, you have to get this done and turn it around. Which actually, you know, at that point, you're almost so sick of it. Of reading it, you don't want to read it again. So, because it gets to that point, like you write it and then you have to read it and reread it and reread it.
And how was the original feedback from the editors?
Well, Becoming Brave was really different, but I changed it. My editor got it and submitted it, but then I went through I had it completely finished, but then I separated from my husband and I was like, I have to open this back up again. We cannot talk about becoming brave without the bravest move that I've possibly ever made. So then it was like, all right, we need to unlock this. And I took out 10,000 words and then added a whole lot more. So then that totally changed the context of the book, which, you know, I wasn't locked to anyway. So that was received really well. And that's a book that sort of, in terms of like a business perspective, like anxiety and mental health is such a, you know, marketable and relevant topic. So in terms of how successful that book will be, when those, you know, mental health days and are you okay days and all of those things come up, yeah, I can re-market that book and that brings that all back into life again. And the lessons don't stop coming. Like I can keep revisiting that. They're not,
yeah, of
you
course.
Know.
And how are you finding people are resonating with your content now in like, with the coronavirus and
so relevant.
Yeah.
It's so, so relevant. And that book was finished in 2018 and still appearing now. But the book that was released in November was called Messy and about being able to like embrace your life and the mess that it is. And if there's ever a time where everything's gone to shit and all bets are off, but it doesn't make life any less valuable.
Yep.
It's now with this whole, you know, coronavirus that's coming around. And I actually think that, like, we all know that the world had to change, like, the pace at which things were going.
And just the good times and obviously people having bad times in their own micro events. But as a global thing, like, it's like a long period of time without anything really bad happening.
Well, that's it. This is going to be one of those things, like a before and after. Like 9/11, when that happened, everything changed for us after that. Like that was a catastrophic event that affected everyone on a monumental scale.
Yep.
Our security systems all over the world and all the airports and everything changed from that day. And this is going to be the same in terms of how we relate to each other, how we consume information, how we have relationships, how we communicate, how we connect.
Yeah.
And I mean, well, you've done the same thing. Like, you have totally flipped your life on its head over the past few years.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Totally gone a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think exposing yourself to that and moving from my last business and choosing to just jump out of that when it was potentially like fine, there was no reason to except for just a need to not be there. And when you actively shake your own stuff up, which you've done a couple of times as well, when things like this arise, it's not really that scary because it's like, well, I've already put myself in a position of making no money and starting again. So if I can choose to do that, then any external force that might put that across me, it's like, it's not that big of a deal.
No. Well, it's like resilience.
Yeah.
And you've proved it to yourself once and you can do it again.
Yeah.
And it's just embracing. The biggest thing, I think, is being able to pivot.
Mm. Which for business is definitely something you can choose, definitely, but then harder for all those people who have chosen the route of careers,
mm-hmm.
like university. It's like, all right, well, I've just put 4 to 6 years into university and then I've just put another 6 years into a career that I've just finally gotten to a point
yeah.
where I'm actually going to make some money and get all the fruits from everything I've just done. How do I pivot quickly?
Yeah.
And do I need to? Do I just try to pause and wait? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a hard thing for people in those positions.
So hard. And I was just talking to one of my girlfriends yesterday and she's frontline health. So she is like, has never been more in demand right now.
Mm-hmm.
Her stress levels and everything have gone up. She's a theatre nurse, but her partner, who was also in the health industry, he has just lost his job because of this. Like, he will get it back, yep. obviously, when everything goes, you know, according to when everything normalizes. Well, I don't even know if normalizes. What is normal going to be after this? We don't know. But when everything starts to reopen, re-energize and reinvigorate. But the same thing, he spent his whole life working towards this amazing career that he had and a very lucrative one at that. And now it's like unemployed.
Yeah.
Same industry, two different roles within that.
Yeah.
But then what's his option? So he is going to, I think, start. He's got such a positive mindset with it and such an open mindset that he's like, well, I'm going to use this time to do something productive outside in terms of his creativity and then use that. But there'd be a lot of people that would just be like, well, shit.
Yeah, I think if they're thinking more along like their career as a title, it creates a box that you can't move out of versus if they're thinking of the skill sets that they have and they break that down, if they're thinking, okay, this business has helped me with communication, it's helped me with networking with people that can put me in positions of getting things that I want, it's helped me with like tech skills or just helped me with writing, whatever the business. And if you just look at the skill set, there's many other boxes that skill set fits into.
Totally.
But if you're just looking at the title, like I'm a lawyer or I'm like, if you're the thing, then it's quite rigid. Whereas if your skill sets can match into so many different things, and that's where I think, and like yourself, if you're in the business of solving people's problems, you're never going to be short of problems.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
And that's you'd know with marketing, like in terms of, you know, getting things out there, you have to solve a problem.
Yep.
And people, like, talk to people's pain points. And luckily, that's something that I understand and get. But even back to what you were saying before, like, you know, when you've got your own business and it comes in ebbs and flows, I was having like a full, like the money wasn't coming in the way that I wanted it to in terms of like a big pitch. I'm like, I cannot keep churning these wheels. So I was looking at, you know, like updating my CV and everything. And I was like, maybe that luxury of having a paycheck would be fantastic. So I was looking at that. But because I've been working autonomously for almost 10 years and working for myself for 6, on paper, that obviously I could break down all of my skills and that would look like one thing, but to, like, there's no degree or fancy anything that would come from that. So, yeah, it's a full, like, I won't, but like a head mashup, we'll call it.
You can swear.
Well, it's a full head fuck in terms of what you're looking at and if your self-worth is based around a title or something external from you that, you know, that can be really detrimental. And especially with coronavirus, if you have placed all of your eggs in the basket of your job title or those KPIs that suddenly aren't there anymore, how are you going to pivot?
Yeah,
what are you going to do?
And it's hard to pivot right now as well. Like, it's easy for people to say you need to pivot and change and do all this sort of stuff. But no one, like a large percentage of people, aren't looking to take on new people. Like you said, you're going in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Everything is shutting down more and more. They're waiting. So even if you have a positive mindset, it's really not about that, because there is always opportunities, but depending how low you want to go, in a sense, in terms of your decision making and what you're willing to accept for yourself to do for an interim period.
But I
think what it really puts a spotlight on is like people's financial position. So it's like, if you're in a position where you're exposed after 2 weeks of not having income and that, then I think that's definitely a where the focus should be.
Totally, bring
in the
money.
And I don't know if myself or if other people or if everyone will actually learn a lesson or they'll just go back to what they were doing originally.
Yeah, who knows?
Because if, and this is where it goes, that it's the people who know how to navigate uncertain times that will survive even more or thrive even more. And the people who don't will continue not to. Like, I'm sure a small percentage of people will get a wake-up call.
Yeah.
But with the stimuluses coming in and the little bit of, like, safety ropes and stuff like that, which is great, but it will also stop any real hard adaptation towards what you should do, because you don't have your feet to the fire.
Well, that's true too.
Yeah.
And I actually did a big live chat yesterday, because I'm seeing especially a lot from the women. Mind you, my sample is quite skewed because I work predominantly with women.
Yep.
And a lot of my friends that I'm connected to are mothers like myself. But the pressure that is out there right now, because the children are home or people are being encouraged or forced to work from home, then they're finding that their productivity has gone down and their ability to do what they once did at the level at which they used to do it is diminished. And so the stress levels are then going up. But I just don't think that's feasible. Like, I feel like at this uncertain time where it's not normal, so expecting us to continue to show up in a way and live in a way and produce in a way that was normal is completely, should be off the table.
Yeah, and it's like, even that, it's 100%. Like, people are attached to the normality and the word normal when it's just routine. And then as soon as they're going into their own routine, like, they're, or they're thinking, all right, I'm going to drag this routine into this new environment, and then it's just frustration.
Yeah.
It's big time. It's like, we moved out to a new place out at like 20 minutes out of town.
Yeah.
And then myself and partner are trying to always drive back into town to go to cafes. It's like, you're attached to your old routine. And it's like, we're actually spending 40 minutes in the car when we don't need to. But it's just that you just get addicted to the little amounts of joy or ways, because especially too, if you've figured a thing out, like, you're like, I've got this new pattern where I get to work and I have a conversation and I and then I will do 40 minutes of productive work, and then I will take a little break on YouTube, and then I will all these sorts of things. And then you're trying to replicate that, but then you, like, you might be trying to call your friend at nine, and then rather than talking to a workmate, and then that supplement isn't the same thing. And then it's just, then you've got the kids coming, your whole day's done, and then you've got the expectations to produce, but then potentially the work environment isn't requiring that, so you've got to pretend like you're working a full day when you only need to
and
work 3 hours.
And it's like, there was a quote from one of my favorite movies: normality, or becoming normal, actually denotes a lack of courage. And so, I loved it. I was like, it does. So this whole idea that we're striving to be normal is just boring and repetitive. But that comfort in routine, you know, maybe that hasn't, like you were saying, like, driving all that way in, while that's familiar and we're often creatures of habits without even realizing that we are, there's power in shaking that up.
Yep.
And we are what we do every day. So, you know, if you are constantly trying to live up to a standard that no longer exists, or that was a standard that was set when, you know, things were looking a certain way, of course you're going to be frustrated. Yep. But taking a sledgehammer to that and allow it, like lowering the bar, which is one of the first chapters in, you know, the key to happiness is to lower the bar. And that doesn't mean that you're having lower standards
yep.
by any means. I'm all for the highest standards that you want, yep. but it's allowing yourself to be happier with less.
Yeah, and I really love that. I started reading your book only last night and got to the point, I got about six chapters in, where you're talking about that. Like, so it's lowering the bar. It's almost like, and you can sort of explain this out a little bit more, is that it's like you're almost like allowing yourself to clear the slate, clear the pressure, and then build up.
Yeah.
From that with a new clear direction.
Totally.
Yep.
And we've constantly got to come back and reevaluate what success looks like for us.
Yeah, and I love the sentence. It wasn't a big title or anything, but you just wrote in one of your sentences in the book, and it says, like, re-examine the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's cool. Because and that can apply to everything.
Everything. Because how often are the rules that we're living by not actually ours? Like, we're sponges from, you know, as soon as we're born, we're absorbing information and morals and rules and someone else's belief systems.
Yeah.
And like, even on a personal level, like, I remember I've got two little boys, one, they're almost three and almost six, and they're wild, and they wanted to ride their skateboards in the house. And I remember fighting this for ages, going like, no, you can't ride in the house, you can't ride in the house. And then one day I thought, well, hang on, I don't actually have a problem with them riding their skateboards in the house.
Yep.
That's my mother telling me I can't ride in the house.
Yep.
So now they do hot laps around, which, you know what, it's probably not a stupid rule to have because we've got glass doors and everything. So maybe, you know, it's not completely crazy, but we've got to examine, like, constantly and check in with ourselves as to whose rules we're living by, what standards we're trying to measure up to, and seeing if that still holds true for us, because what we once believed was really important now might not be. Like, we're not the same people that we were on a personal level or a business level or anything, like 5 weeks, 5 months, 5 years ago. To hold yourself to that, it's you know, you're setting yourself up for failure and frustration again.
Yeah, absolutely. I always picture with, like, people setting all these, like, it could be around marriage, it could be kids, it could be owning a house and stuff like that. And then you think about that person at the age when that idea was formed. So you picture, like, a six-year-old version of, like, your friend or someone that you know that's actually telling the current version of them that you need to buy a house, and they're listening to a six-year-old child.
Totally.
And it's like, you're actually listening to a six-year-old child about this decision and you're just following through on it for no reason? Like, it's so dumb when you think of it like
so
that.
So dumb, because the decisions that we subconsciously made and promises to ourselves, you know, that we're still holding true to now. And how, like, unless you're actually having these conversations with yourself, then that's what you're constantly going to be able to believe. And people don't realize that you can constantly change your belief system. Like, you can constantly reboot, like, change your default setting. Like, that's possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're not doing that, then actually you're living in the past. Like, you're constantly just checking back in. It's like when you're, you know, like, if you decide to, like, with the work that I do in terms of, like, mindset coaching, people, like, you've got the same thought process about the same things. It's like when you're going, say, you're leaving for work, leaving to go home from work, right? You always go the same way home.
Yep.
It's like you come out your driveway, you turn right, and then you go right again and da-da-da. You just go on autopilot. But you can choose to go a different way home, but you've just initially, it's going to be like, oh, I've got to come here. Oh, now what have I got to do? I've got to turn left.
Yep.
And then you've got to turn left again. And it's that's like, that is how you rewire yourself to believe a different way, to reboot. But you've got to have that moment of consciousness first to go, well, I don't want to keep going on that path to before you can choose a new one.
So what other habits and things do you have going on at the moment? Could be exercise in this time to keep your mindset strong.
Oh, movement is so important for me. So that is a given every single day. So I went and ordered my kettlebells and everything as soon as this started.
Oh yeah.
So I was one of the lucky ones. So I've got my I'm not like your gym set up here, let me tell you. I've got two kettlebells and a set of hand weights and a couple of body bands.
Yeah.
But that's a given. So when I have the boys, our routine is, it's loose, But we get out every morning because I need to run them, like puppies, wild wolves, wild wolf cubs. So that's something that helps me and it helps them. Yeah. Obviously, we're sensible and we isolate, you know, social distancing and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's all fine, but we do something active because that helps my mental health and helps them as well. And then we come back and we have, you know, home time and then outside again in the afternoon in the backyard. So the structure's there, but loose.
And are you doing, like, what are you doing with the kettlebells? Are you doing, like, just time sets? Are you doing reps? What are you?
I've got, like, little workouts that I've got, like, a group chat going with my girlfriends and we're all putting different workouts in there.
Cool.
I'm doing workout with the kids.
Yep.
But it's, like, you know, like some MRAP workouts. There's different things for time. I've got the app on my phone, you know, for, like, Tabata and things like that. But I've got, like, one 20-kilo kettlebell, and I'm like, you can do a lot with that, that in terms of strength.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've pulled out the weight vest for the stairs, which I haven't done in years, and my calves were like beef jerky for a few days. But it's a lot of, it's strength and then walking, you know, like, so it's not the same as, oh no, there's conditioning in there and things like that as well, but it's definitely not what it was, but like when I was going to the gym and having that social connection.
Yep.
But it's still very much part of my day. Yep. And then it's part of the kids as well. But in terms of like socially, because I'm an introvert, but I also will go cuckoo if I'm not chatting to people. We did, the girls and I did like one of those house party chats.
Yep.
And it turned in to a 4.5 hour, pretty much a binge drinking.
There seems to be a lot of increased drinking.
It was so bad. It was so much fun. Yep. So, so much fun. But ensuring that we had that social element, and it was like mum's gone wild in our lounge rooms having that. And that was really important to have that connection with them on a Saturday night where we would normally have gone out for dinner or done something.
Yeah.
So finding ways to work out what works for me and what I need to be my best self, and then finding ways to be able to adapt to give that to myself and my family within this time and my business, that's really important. Like we just got to jig it.
So it sounds like you're in a pretty good flow with things at the moment.
I feel like I am. I don't feel like that my life actually was that different.
Yeah. I saw that in a meme. It's like if you're in isolation and your routine hasn't changed, like
I've been able to tweet, like the different things was like where I would catch up with friends at a coffee shop. It's now like I can still get my coffee, like I've got it here today, but I'm using a Hey You app.
Yep.
And I'm going in and I'm just picking it up and going, or I'm talking to my friends on the phone on my walk.
Yep.
And those sorts of things. So you can find it, but I mean, the motivation's not always there, but I know that I need to do that in order to be able to carry on with the rest of my day at a higher vibe level.
Yep. And you're handling well in people in your world. How are they handling it?
I think the kids, like, honestly, I've loosened the grip on the iPads and things like that. There's no like TV time and iPad time now. It's like when we're home and we've done the active things, you guys can have your devices just because, like, let's just let it be easy. I will deal with the aftermath of that later on. There's definitely, I have got a few friends that I think, you know what, it's as like, especially as a woman, basically our friendship circle is one of us having a meltdown after the other. Like someone's always having an emotional existential crisis and everyone's always picking each other up, which I guess would be the same in your relationships and things like that. Someone's struggling generally.
Yeah. Pick up the slack a bit. Yeah.
Totally. And so that's how I see that in my friendships. I see that in my, because a lot of the businesses that, and my girlfriends are entrepreneurs and, you know, running their businesses from all over Australia and all over the world. Some are struggling and some business coaches are struggling like today, but then they're launching amazing products. And so they're in this launch mode, but we're all, you know, helping each other out, checking in, doing those sorts of things. So I don't think no one that I know is like just totally ratchet with it, but everyone's riding the waves.
Yeah. I feel like there's what you tapped on there a little bit. There's been a reduction in that competitiveness and that tall poppy syndrome a little bit more.
Sure.
It's like, oh, we're all, and that's the slogan that everyone's putting out there, like we're all in this together. And there is a bit of that. It's like, all right, I'm willing to let more people in connection wise that normally I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Because you all perceive that you're all not doing that well. So it mm-hmm. makes people put down their guards a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm very much for community over competition. Mm. I have so many amazing women and friends that are coaches, and we're all different. Like everyone people are going to be drawn to you for different reasons. Mm. So the fact that, and different businesses, or we've got similar businesses, but our clients are going to, you know, I've got no problem with shouting someone out if I see them doing something great and that sort of thing, because that's, otherwise you're just, you're alone.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's no fun for anyone.
And yeah.
You can all leverage each other and support each other and learn from each other.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot more of that going on, which is really cool to see.
It is cool. And that's something I definitely noticed with, just say, even between here and the States, is that, like, here it is that really protective competitiveness, and then over there it's really there's enough to go around.
Yeah.
So that's a really good thing that's happened, I guess, in this time, that, like, exactly that. But you're already living that out anyway.
Yeah.
And you're 100% right in that it's not like someone's going to be coming through a totally different DNA, a totally different set of experiences. So even if you both have the same title, it doesn't matter, like, because mm-hmm. you're going to connect with so many different people.
Yeah.
And, like, yes, you could have sold to that client first and potentially got them on for one of your programs or sold them something, but they're not going to be with you forever. Like,
they shouldn't be.
Yeah, they shouldn't be. They're either going to be like a long-term client or they're not, based on the value you give, but assuming both parties give the equal value or both put in, they're going to like one person more.
Yeah.
And that's what they say. It's like if two twins walk into the room, you like one better.
Totally. Like, and so people should evolve.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Like, as a coach or as anything, like, people, I don't want my clients to stay with me forever. That I wouldn't be doing my job.
Yep.
I want them to come to learn, to grow, and to move on.
Yep.
Like, that's just the nature of the business. And then when you had, like, I know when I was a personal trainer, and you, if you had your, like, if you had a client for 6 months, you were doing really well, especially. Yep. Like when it was like outdoor training, I know if I could keep women coming for like two consecutive programs, that was considered quite successful.
Yeah.
But then not personalizing it when people move on, that's got to be fine as well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if people are interested, say, like in terms of like in the book realm, if people are interested in personal development, they're going to read my book and then they're going to go and read similar books as well.
Yeah.
So that is fantastic for the women in my industry, because they should be, we can all work together. We can all feed off each other, because like I'm reading like Glennon Doyle. I'm also reading Elizabeth Gilbert. I'm also reading, you know, Eckhart Tolle. I'm all of these. They don't need to be in competition. I can take bits and pieces from everyone.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, that say Glennon Doyle should feel territorial because all of a sudden I'm buying someone else's book. So you should have, your clients should feel comfortable enough to, you know, dip their toe into a whole heap of different pools, and you should be okay with that. Like, it doesn't have, if you, as long as you're not taking it personally.
Yeah. Especially with how much everyone's consuming right now.
Totally.
Like, you can't create enough to satisfy the needs. Like,
no.
So you'd have to be writing 10 books a year.
Ugh. Yeah. And who wants to be doing that? Like, that's another thing that I've definitely watched at the moment is my consumption of everything. Like, I don't watch the news, like the mainstream news. That's too much for my little sensitive heart. I take it with me and it's too much. Like, I will catch the big updates.
Yep.
You know, like the chats at a time where I'm feeling like solid enough and ready to have that information ingested and that download and absorb it. But yeah, I'm in charge of that. There's no one in my social media feeds that would, you know, trigger me in a way that, or make me feel overwhelmed, less than, or anything like that. And that's not to say that you shouldn't be challenged.
Yep.
Because I'm all for that. But there's no need for us to be forced to be faced with things that are not supporting our mental health and our best selves. Honestly, 90% of my feed's memes right now.
Like, it seems like that's going good. So with your social media and like a big part of your business coming from there, how do you find the feedback from everyone on that?
In terms of what I'm putting out?
Yeah, on your own content,
I, you know what, I've pulled back. I'm really conscious because I think I went through, depending on what I've got going on as well in my personal life, because I feel like I'm doing a lot, even though I'm probably not doing a lot, the energy expenditure is a lot to get through the day, I think, at the moment because of all the stuff,
yep.
Emotional energy expenditure. But yesterday, like, I'm trying to mix it up. I have a podcast that generally comes out once a week, but if it doesn't, that's fine.
Yep. Does your audience care when it doesn't, or they're...
No, they're crazy. Yeah. Although I will, like, because they're listening to a whole broad range of podcasts.
Yeah, they're just seeing it pop up and then...
Exactly. Yep. And that I don't want to... I don't feel like I've let anyone down if I don't do that because... Yep. I don't want that pressure.
Yep.
I did an Instagram live yesterday, which got amazing feedback. And I have only done one of those before. So yep. I was like, well, that's interesting.
Yep.
Okay. And that was like a 30-minute.
Did you do that with someone or just by yourself?
Just by myself.
Yep. Have you seen the ones where people are doing a lot of live videos with, like...
I have seen that.
Yeah, that looks pretty cool.
That does look really cool. And that's another thing. It's like, okay, so you just... The way that I approach it is I just try not to take it too seriously and just experiment, try it, see what works yep. and what I enjoy as well, as opposed to what gets the most engagement. Like, I know if I post a photo of me with, you know, some really profound words or something like that, it's not going to get shared as much as if I used a tile with text.
Yeah.
That's going to get shared way more because not everyone wants to share a photo of me, which is fair enough. Why don't they want to share it of me? No, I'm kidding. So, like, those sorts of things where it's like, okay, so I consciously will choose that.
Yep.
But then it's finding the balance of people wanting to see who you are and what you do and the aesthetics of your feed and all of that. Yeah. I don't go into it too much, but then it's also got to come into it apart. But I use my stories on Instagram a lot.
Yep.
And that gets a lot of engagement
yep.
for me, which I love. But yeah, it's just, it's trial and error and trying what different things and what the algorithm,
yep.
which is always changing.
Yep.
But yeah, it's, I love social media.
What's your favorite platform for consumption?
Instagram. For sure.
Yep.
And yeah, without a doubt. I'm not into Facebook as much as what...
Yeah, it seems to be that way. It's dropping off.
It really does seem that way. I think Instagram, now that you've got your IGTV and you've got your stories and you've got so many different ways of polls and, you know, that instant buy-in, plus you can sell through Instagram a lot easier.
Yep.
That benefits. And your swipe up feature,
yep.
that changed a lot for me once I hit the 10,000, which
was
really cool.
And are you selling much? Like, do you have a certain frequency in your mind? It's like, all right, I haven't tried to pitch anything or sold anything. Or do you have, all right, every 4 days I'm going to try to sell something?
I wish I was that organized. I wish. But in my mind, I'm like, I don't have anything on paper, which I probably... It would be good to map it out. But again, I don't know. I watch.
Yep.
I watch to see what's coming up, what's talking about, what's relevant.
Mm.
And I'm communicating with my community constantly with asking little questions. Hey, what do you guys want to hear about?
Yep.
Da, 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 da. And I get that feedback. And you can generally see, do people, for me, are people wanting to hear about fear-based things, anxiety? Are they wanting to hear about, like, based on the live that I had yesterday?
Yep.
Working from home. How do we work from home with children? So then from that Instagram live where I was basically telling everyone to cool their jets and chill, now I'm booking a corporate webinar for a company that saw that and they're like,
cool.
Can you come on and talk to our workers? So now I'm like, okay, so that was a big thing. So then I'll go and create a podcast and also a post on like 10 tips.
Yep.
So I'm not too set in stone. You can't be right now. Like, the best marketing plans are all, you know, like, you can have an idea, but I had no idea that that would be like a month ago. A factor.
Yeah, exactly. You can't plan for that.
You can't, but yep. you've got to be aware and on the pulse. And I just was like, okay, but that's cool. I'll take it with a grain of salt with, yeah, okay, that's interesting. I can do something with that. And then I can also then see if any of the products and the offerings that I've got
yep.
whilst delivering that can fit in to, like, upsell
yep.
this.
And are you putting calls to action? Like, are you just saying, like, are you pushing people into direct message? Are you pushing people with your swipe ups to a certain page? What are you doing?
If it changes, it's either to podcast, but I'm getting better as yep. well at on my podcasts, mentioning the products that would benefit that. That was something I was really terrible at before. Also, I felt quite icky about it, but it's like, well, no, it's my, I'm providing a service by sharing what I can offer people.
Yeah. Yeah,
it doesn't have to be that icky, slimy sales thing that it used to be, or that was pitched in like the early, like the 90s and that sort of thing. It's a service to share our, what we can give, right? And what we have on offer. And if we're not doing that and we're not marketing it and sharing it, then like, I mean, you could have the best product in the world, but it does jack shit if no one knows about it.
Yeah. Cool. And are you looking to branch into any other social media platforms like LinkedIn? What about TikTok?
Do you know what? I downloaded that. I can't work it out. I can't work out TikTok yet. I don't. It gets really high engagement.
Super high engagement. Yeah.
Super high. How I would use that for my business, I don't know. I've got LinkedIn. I've never utilized it. Yeah.
And there's a big push towards LinkedIn at the moment engagement as well.
Do you want to teach me how to use it?
Absolutely. So whereas posts that you would post on another platform, just say if you're on Instagram and it's just around there for a couple of hours, or Facebook, you might get the day or something like that, you'll have organic content on LinkedIn that's around for a week, 2 weeks.
Oh.
And it just keeps floating around.
Okay.
Because they have changed their algorithm to be more like Facebook, like 10 years ago. And there's a big drive behind, like from like a lot of US marketers.
Yeah.
Saying how the engagement's so big, so everyone will sort of start to push across, and then it'll obviously be the same thing, and then the engagement will get less and less and less.
So what does LinkedIn actually, like, what's its main, like, goal?
Originally it was, like, for people to network through, like, business connections and job seeking, but now it's the same, there's a lot of people doing similar things. So, like, your content on, like, how to work from home, super relevant right now. You think about the industry and the type of people, and especially if you already know, just say a company connects with that type of thing, that content would be great on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to go and dust off my password for LinkedIn, which God knows. I'm going to spend my rest of my day going like, re-enter password and then update password, and password can't be the same as previous password, and just, oh.
Yeah,
I hate that.
Yeah, so when you're shooting your content, what are you shooting just on your phone?
Yeah, just on my iPhone. I've got a brand new, like the whiz bang fancy pants iPhone with the 3 cameras, but that's only because my other phone went in the water. Yeah, so I just use that. I have a very simple way of doing everything.
Yeah, so the thing with the most of the content that, like, you could potentially try to shoot it in like a landscape as well for LinkedIn, but it doesn't matter too much. It will just put edges on your video and. Yeah, you're good to go.
And do like lives and things like that, like, or not, they wouldn't have lives, but basically just video content on solving a problem again.
Video content, and then also too, like if you're doing like little text titles, that sort of stuff. So like, it's like almost like a time machine back a couple of years. So like your motivational quotes and that people are resonating with.
On LinkedIn now.
Even statuses.
Get out. Like there's a stat, oh.
Like, so, yeah, you, rather than importing a post, you would just, like, you see a lot of people saying, like, hope everyone's well right now. Like,
get out.
Yeah, so statuses.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you see as the next big platform, or the platform that really we should all be utilizing right now?
Well, for us, our focus is a big focus on LinkedIn.
Okay.
It depends on what you want to do and what you're naturally towards.
Yeah.
If you're creative and you're funny and you're good with the camera and you're good with a little bit of phone editing, obviously you can do some stuff with TikTok, but it depends on what like your audience is.
Yeah.
Like everyone will end up always being on the big things because like Instagram started out with just as for photographers, and now obviously it's just a high consumption thing for everyone, and people are just posting like videos of their cats or memes and
stuff
like that.
My dog's on there all the time. Yeah. So, Ruby's got her own following on there. Well, on my page, everyone loves my dog.
Yeah. Does she? Your dog have its own
page. She doesn't
page.
Have a page because I was like,
are you going there?
No. But people comment on her. Then that increases my engagement. She's hilarious. She's the most random dog. But that, again, gets the conversation flowing, which then gets you in more feeds. But I also just think she's funny. So.
And is she's tearing up the backyard too.
Oh, she's digging holes. She burped today. And I made a story about that because I've never heard a dog burp. like full belch in my life. She came and sat next to me on the lounge and she just burped. And so I shared that on there because, well, I mean, if you're looking, like, I just thought it was funny, but it's that same thing that my audience is generally me. Like, you know what I mean? It's a version of myself.
Yeah, I think that's
myself.
Where we all come from, like inside solving our own problems. We want to try to share that experience.
And so if I think this is funny, then someone else is probably going to think this is funny. But for me, it's a way to connect because if I don't have the boys at home, I'm literally sitting there with a burping dog. And so I use that to connect. And then a lot of my audience are women and they're also at home on their own or with the kids and need to disconnect from the stress or whatever is going on. And they look to connect with someone or something through their device. So then that provides that as well. So it's that balance of being able to share the message or share about products or events and the business side of things, but also create that trust and that relationship where people understand why I am the way that I am, why I teach the way that I teach, or trust that I am who I say that I am. And I share that because what I share is not just the highlight reel. It's very real.
Yeah, like, I noticed that even in your book, like you give a bit of backstory. Or little snippets of like your experiences along the way, who makes you are who you are.
Yeah, I think it's important. Like, perfect is boring. No one buys into that. And I know if I'm listening to someone, or I will learn more and I will relate more and be more interested in someone who is sharing from the trenches and who has overcome something or learnt from something or is sharing an embarrassing story or something like that, as opposed to the person who's like double gunning it, walking through being all like a rock star and that they're perfect. I'm not going to buy what you're selling. You know what I mean?
Like,
I'm not going to relate to them as much as someone who's like, well, this is shit. Like, I get this.
Yeah.
You know, like, or just something funny. Like, they're the people who will spark my interest and I'll engage with, as opposed to the people who are all perfect and shiny all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So with your book, we'll jump into that a little bit. Like that, how long ago was your last book? Has it come out?
November 2019.
Yeah. Awesome. So just a brief overview. I'm sure you've had this question before, but we'll jump into like the interview style. So general gist of the book for anyone who's listening, just so they can end up jumping on, checking it out.
It's the guide to living lighter and giving less forks. Yep. So it's rather than a flow through piece, like Becoming Brave was a long, you know, like it followed on. It's 54 blog style pieces. So like easy to consume, 54 different like lessons, like observations, fun things where you can pick it up, take what you need and leave the rest. Yeah, but basically it's a step about building your confidence, becoming more secure in who you are and giving way less shits about what we were once sold as being important and bringing you back to be the main driver's seat of your life. So that was super fun to write.
Yep. And do you have any plans to write any more books? Any ideas for me now?
I do. I want to write one called The Good Enough Mum.
Yep. That's cool.
Because I just think there's way too much pressure around everyone to be perfect. But I think I'm going to try something different. I think I will only put that as an audible.
Yeah.
And see how that goes. Because again, trial and error. But if you're a mother, you're generally time poor. Yep. So it's like looking at your audience and I'm only like 10,000 words into that at the moment. Yeah. But it's also, I haven't touched it for about 6 months. I'm like, I'm going to leave that and then I'm focusing on different things. But who knows? I'm very open, but it's been more in the lines of the programs and online programs that I've been focusing for the last, since I released that book. But you've got to give yourself a little break.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I did listen to a cool concept in terms of audio form on David Goggins' book. The name of it's escaping me. But what he did was rather than just having it narrated throughout the chapters, he would have the chapter and then in between the chapter was like a little mini podcast about the experiences from that chapter. So he would have two people, so he'd have a, like almost like an interview style thing in between. So there was probably 10 minutes in between every single chapter that was getting you to ask questions, like to sort of think those ideas out even more and how you were feeling about those experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a super, it's probably the most engaging audiobook I've listened to.
That's a good concept.
Yeah.
See, that's the sort of thing. Like, I think we've just got to be adaptable. I know I will always love a hard copy book. That's how I choose to read.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always, when I'm in the car, when I'm walking and that sort of thing, I'm on the podcast and the rest of it, or when I'm in the kitchen. So I just think, yeah, I think that would be a really cool thing. I never thought of bringing someone else in.
Yeah, it's cool. And then so with books, are you a start to finish book reader, consumer?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, but I used to have this little rule for myself that if I started it, I had to finish it, and I wasn't allowed to pick up another one. But I've also then found myself being really frustrated if a book's shit.
Yep.
And then I've made this promise. So I've given myself permission that if I'm not enjoying it by a certain point, I can put that down.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now that there's like the secret book stuff, or I don't keep that book floating around because it'll annoy me and remind me that I didn't finish it.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, totally. So it's out the door and I give it away or I donate it to someone. Like the secret book stuff is a shop in town and then they sell it in their bookstore, but then they use that money to provide books for Outback.
Yeah.
So I'm like, these are the loopholes that my brain's like, how can I make this okay that I've just crapped out on a little rule that I had for myself? How can I make this okay?
I used to feel that way about books and used to try to finish them and used to stick them out and never wanted to do the same.
Yeah.
And now I rarely finish a book and a lot of the time I don't even read books in order and I'll read probably about 6 books at the same time.
Wow. That is cool, because how do you know what you're going to want to ingest?
Yeah, exactly. So then it's purely based on feeling of like, so I will be like, oh, I feel like this type of topic, or I feel like it could be coaching, or it could be business, or it could be some like old war stuff or anything like that. So it's like, it's purely based on what you feel as opposed to thinking that you need to. And then in time, I'll just jump into old books and I'll go, all right, and just pick out a chapter, middle of the book, and I'll read that one chapter. And I'll read for 10 minutes or 15 or anything like that, and then done. And I might not come back to that book again.
What's the number one book that you're reading at the moment?
I'm reading a book called Scale Up. So I'm doing that on audiobook.
Yep.
Which is cool. So it's just like pretty much deep business fundamentals. So, and even when I'm reading that, so I'm doing that on audiobook, but I'll do that on my computer with headphones in, with my notes open, and I'm taking notes on my phone, on my notes section on my Mac. But then I'm going off on tangents. So just say if he mentions an article or if he mentions another author or another book, I'll pause it and go off on a tangent.
See, that's a really active way to make it relevant for you as well, because it's easy to get lost in whatever. Or you think that would be really good and I could apply it to that, but then it's gone.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then you're capturing thoughts and then you can pause it rather than a lot of the time what I found reading is I'd read and then I'd go off. Like most of the time, and that makes me a super slow reader because a lot of the time I'll read one page, but then I'd be able to create like 5 pages of content from my own thoughts of, because I see books more like a trigger to just thoughts that I haven't had yet.
Yeah.
Same way you're having a conversation with someone, like you have to have 50 sentences back and forth to get to a sentence that holds a value, but you would have never got there unless you did all the stuff before it.
Or you remember.
Yeah.
It triggers something within you
that
you remember that was relevant and how you can apply that. Yep. And then, you know, because the thoughts that have the biggest aha moments are generally the thoughts that we're remembering.
Yeah.
And then we can apply to our own life.
Yeah.
It's rarely something completely new.
Yeah.
It's that we get the, because that I've found anyway, because it takes us, or you'll learn something, go, well, that's cool. But it won't be until you hear it the second or third time that you then, it really lands.
Yeah.
Then you get your 5 pages.
100%. Yeah. Another thing, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because as being an author, I always struggle when people are talking about their success stories in books. So just say I read a lot of business books or just any sort of success books in general. And they're reflecting back on their period, just say 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not real because it's their perception now based on who they thought they were. So like an example would be if I was to like talk about setting up my first company, and if I was to, I could reflect and express on it now what I thought I was going through, but then if I was honestly thinking like on a daily basis, it'd be like I didn't know what I was doing. I was just like, I was just rummaging through and playing what was in front of me, and I had no idea.
Yeah.
But then I could articulate the process of it.
Yeah.
And then how I now know in what I now know, how that is, but it's me, it's not that version. So when you're trying to teach people to say down, like you're saying A to Z, you're reaching back from Z, mm-hmm. and you're trying to express where you are at A, but it's not the actual advice.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, I had no idea what I was doing. You can't write that.
No, well, isn't it Steve Jobs who says you can't connect the dots looking forwards, only backwards?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly right.
But everyone's writing from, like, yeah. and trying to move through that and like, oh, taking, and it's like, well, you're telling me, and also too, I struggle with the idea of like people giving a refined version so you don't make the same mistakes they made,
mm-hmm.
because ultimately those mistakes took them to the position of writing
exactly.
like that book. So
it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a really tricky one because I wouldn't be who I am without every single shit show that I've been in. And I don't just learn a lesson once. Like I really
yep.
hammer it home that do make the same mistake over and over and over again. Or it morphs. Like I still catch myself doing things and it's the same lesson. It's just slightly tweaked and it's yep. shown up in different ways. But the difference is how quickly we bounce back from them now or how long we stay stuck
yep.
in it or how we respond rather than react.
Yep.
So it's not about coming, I think, now, like if I was, when I'm writing about things, like I definitely, like Becoming Brave, it was my first book, I dove right back into like being 16, 17, 18, all those sorts of mistakes, but they're not relevant to where I am now, but that was the first book, so it had to be there, nor could I have started from anywhere else. But yeah. Constantly reflecting back, constantly shape-shifting and seeing where I am now. But I wouldn't change a thing. There's definitely I can see 100% of the time where there were red flags and I can see now why I made the choices that I did and took the paths that I did. Does that mean I won't make the same sort of thing? I don't know. But that's part of it. Like we wouldn't be who we are without that.
Exactly.
And whether in business or personal or what.
Yeah. And you don't even know if the memories are true.
Well, yes. You get the same person talking about the same event and they're both going to recall it incredibly differently.
Yeah.
I was listening to Dax Shepard's podcast, The Armchair Expert, who I love. He's my favorite podcast of all. And he was saying that he and his brother have this same... Obviously, they're in the car and it had to do with their parents splitting up, but they both remember it completely differently, even different houses that
yep.
they're saying that it happened.
100%.
So how can you – it's all just – and our memories do that. Like our brain, you know, is constantly just shuffling things around the filing cabinet and we're just hoping for the best. I don't know.
So any more on your book that you wanted to get out there?
I think it's just one of those things. I think that I've always believed that people will find the books that they need to find when they need to find them.
Yep.
But Becoming Brave is definitely about turning your fear into bravery and based around thriving alongside your anxiety and creating a new relationship with fear, which I think is really, really relevant right now. And Messy is about being okay with the mess and, you know, the fact that it is a bit of a shit show, no one knows what's going on, but that doesn't mean that life has any less value. So they are there. They're both available on Booktopia. And yeah, who knows what
cool.
I'll come up with next.
And programs, what do you
have? Programs,
what do you have?
I have a short course in letting go called Onwards, and that's an Audible program.
Yep.
Messy is an audio book as well.
Yep.
And
where can people find those?
At ktdean.com.au.
Yep.
They're both available there. And then my one-on-one coaching. So it's all multifaceted, slowly coming together.
That's cool. Well,
yeah.
We'll wrap this up now, but thank you so much for coming in today. I love it. And also we'll get you back in when you have your new book and then
oh,
we can see
you.
All the new experience that you
thank
have
you
going
on. Thank
you
so much for having me. This was so fun. I love this whole conversation. It's nice to talk about the behind the scenes and the back end of business and how everyone's navigating things right now. So thank you.
All right. Thanks, Katie. Thanks for joining us on the show today. Be sure to hit that subscribe button, and if you love the episode and you love the show, be sure to share it with a friend. See you soon.